When we last left our heroes, they were locked into a terribly important discussion. Let's drop in on them again as they plot the future. Now, from the Top Dog's Kennel in beautiful downtown Burbank, it's the Terrence and Philip Show.
And here we are once again with the Terrence and Philip Show. I'm Philip Hodgetts and...
I'm Terrence Curran.
And today we are going to talk about whether or not you should care about workflow.
Oh, boy.
This came about at a Lafcipug meeting of a month or two ago, and again it came up in this last meeting informally. I heard somebody walk up the stairs and I thought I heard them say, I really don't care about this workflow stuff. I just want to cut. I cringed.
Did you like track him down and beat the hell out of him?
I should have, but yeah. I was just at that point too big a state of shock to think about it. And then the same attitude was reiterated by one of the people doing a show and tell in the most recent meeting. So
really, I have a baseball bat you can borrow anytime you need to
womp on one of these guys. Felt like that I wanted to do.
It's so irritating because it just ends up being that much more work on the backside for everyone else.
Yeah, so what do we mean when we say cut versus workflow? I mean, I think what I mean is that people who want to edit just don't want to even think about the format that they've shot, how to get it in, how to get the output they want. They just ingest to the simplest possible form and then try and start cutting to get their movie together, because let's face it, cutting is the fun part of the whole process. And I think we're largely talking about people who don't have the traditional assistant model.
Right.
Because my experience has been that...
Yeah, the assistants take care of that.
In a good setup. A good assistant will take care of it.
You know, it's certainly in Hollywood, that's sort of the arrangement.
I must have been blessed with the first time I got involved in those types of scenarios with assistants that they were exceptionally good. I really only got called in when it was way beyond anything basic and something fairly sophisticated. But then I found subsequently on different projects from the same client that the technical knowledge of the assistant seemed to go down at each step.
Oh, that's not good.
So I don't think that the assistants I've most recently interacted with have been as technically competent as those that I first interacted with.
Well, a lot of that, I think, is the falling budgets, hence the falling pay, hence the falling quality of people you get. And, you know, another part of it is we've lost a lot of the apprentice-type relationships where you would learn a lot of the other things from other people, as opposed to now they just have to figure them out themselves. Plus, add to all this, a constantly evolving workflow scenario.
Oh, absolutely.
Every day, it's like, hey, we have a new codec. This one only works with this application, doesn't work with that application. You can use it with that application, but you have to get this third-party application, and you have to apply this separate technique to get it to go through there to get to the, you know, it's like, it's nuts. How do you keep up on top of all of this if you're an assistant who's just capturing dailies all day and trying to organize them for an editor?
Well, read some blogs in between captures.
It's a nightmare. It really is a nightmare, you know, and a lot of the stuff you read it, you know, even for us, it's like I try to stay on top of as many areas as I can. Yes. I'm involved in a lot of lists and blogs and whatnot, and already, having that plus being a full-time colorist plus running a business, it's tricky to do that and balance a family life.
It is.
So there's X amount of brain cells available to dedicate to this stuff. So a lot of it is I'm just scouring through really fast and trying to remember the subject so that if in the future that workflow comes up, at least I'll know where to go back and check, you know? Like the 5D, 7D stuff. It's just, okay, the key word for that is Oliver Peters.
Exactly.
If you've got 5D or 7D stuff, you get that workflow dropped in your lap, you do Oliver Peters, 5D in Google, and bam, you got your workflows. So, you know, that kind of thing, if you can keep at least the place to go look. But where is the average person going to find this stuff? I don't know.
I think a lot of them don't even attempt to find it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I find most frightening at all, is most of the information is available. Yes, if you're right on the leading edge of some new camera or new codec, you might be making it up as you go along, as were the first Red users.
Yeah.
That was really making it up as
first.
You go. Yeah.
They're still making it up as they go along.
There are a couple of fairly well-established workflows.
Sure, as long as they're not using the latest build.
Yes.
Because that's not supported by our SDK, and so our application doesn't support that. And I'm sorry, they changed it. So you have to shoot with the older build.
It's not simple.
It's a moving target. It makes it really difficult to do our jobs efficiently. I think there's a lot of things that have led up to this. And if ever there was a time that we needed people who are really seasoned and had a lot of knowledge in a lot of areas, this is the time. And we're getting the exact opposite of that because the budgets don't want to pay for experience anymore. No. You want to, you know, go as low as possible. You know, is there a guy walking down the street? Yeah, I see one. Okay, bring him over here. Okay, you're an assistant editor. Just got out of school? Perfect. You're an editor. So it's very difficult to have both.
It might also be something that afflicts people who have been in the industry longer than those who are coming in now, in so far as there was very little tech to worry about when you cut film. There's not a lot that can go wrong with a Moviola or a Steinbeck. You try to change the globe occasionally.
Assistants had their work cut out for them in a whole different way.
Yes, they were running for the odd clip here and there, the odd frame here and there in the bottom of the clip, getting the change list right,
getting the effects out, getting them back, you know, keeping everything, you know.
Yes.
To end up with a properly cut negative at the end, there was a lot of finesse that went on behind the scenes, a lot of legwork. So.
But again, they were very established workflows. You had to learn what the way of doing it is.
Yes.
Whereas now you have a whole range of possible input formats of varying quality and ease of use, and a whole range, a more limited range of outputs. But you've got to learn the paths that go, the best paths that go between the two.
Well, it kind of brings us to origination formats, but I think that should be a separate podcast. Yeah, separate show. Because going back to what we were originally talking about here, you know, we've been accused of drifting.
Really? Yes.
If you can imagine that.
I was on a phone call yesterday and somebody said, well, we're off on a tangent, but you and Terry seem to be good at that, so I'm going to go with it anyway.
I don't know why.
That was the person that coined the phrase, the text is the new time code.
Oh, great.
But that's a whole other blog post that I've probably done by the time you hear this.
Okay, so where were we?
Well, we're still talking about, what is this attitude? Yes. How do we get people who have the attitude if they only want to cut? Not necessarily to become interested in the technology. I understand that there are minds that just don't want to deal with that level of technology. They don't get it. It makes no sense to them, but they're quite creative as an editor.
Well, that's the traditional, and that model is, you know, I don't think that most places can afford that anymore, you know. But here in Hollywood, obviously, we still have that model, fortunately, I guess. So that an editor, you know, on features or, you know, network shows, etc., can just focus on cutting. He doesn't have to worry about all this other stuff. He walks in and just edits all day, and the assistant makes everything else happen behind the scenes. We had a panel a couple months ago, which is up on Vimeo, on Editor's Lounge, the Editor's Lounge channel on Vimeo, with editors and assistant editors, and they talked about one of the big things that's changed is you used to be an assistant editor to work your way up to an editor. And nowadays, because they're two isolated areas, I mean, really, the assistant editor is off on some other system somewhere else doing all this prep. He's not sitting in with the editor anymore. That you kind of, people are getting trapped.
Yes.
So, you know, the up and coming people aren't getting the editor's
But aren't
experience.
We saying that these are different skill sets?
Yeah, they are.
If you're a really good assistant, then one presumes you're really good at the technical aspects of the workflow. And if you're a really good editor who's creative and trying to cut down the 120 minutes to 92 or whatever the goal is.
But
these are different careers.
But they're not mutually exclusive. And it used to be that you learned, you know, as an assistant editor, you got the opportunity to learn the artistic side of it. And an artist, okay?
Yes.
You could say, oh, a painter is just creative. No, he's not. He's got to know how to mix pigments. He's got to know how to mix paints. He's got to know what brush is going to give. I mean, there's a whole lot of mechanical tool set that goes on in any art form. It doesn't matter what it is.
Of course.
And so in filmmaking, this is just our part of, you know, or an editor. I should say, this is our part of the mechanical aspect of it. You know, not just why do you place an edit there, but how do you
get the material
so that it actually works.
So, you know, you can't use Sony Vegas, of course, to do any real productive work, because what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Oh,
I'm sorry, that's just a dreadful joke.
That's pretty good. Well, they're going to fix that, Sony will, you know, soon, only not yet. Yeah. Anyways.
That's not to denigrate. I think Vegas is a great application. I've never experienced it because I don't...
Amazing performance.
I don't talk PC. Amazing performance, always.
Yes.
Which shows what we can do with performance. But coming back to, maybe that's what these editors that want to just cut need, is something like Vegas that you can throw anything on the timeline and it will perform and output it, which is not something we see in the most of the apps that we're using, although Adobe are getting closer to that.
You know, in our universe, the finished product is not, you know, what you can spit out of that, out of Vegas, is not going to go on the big screen in Hollywood. There's another step somewhere in the line there of finishing and, you know, letting people who can finesse all the parts like we do here at Alpha Dogs. You know, there is that part of it that is still important. So what happens is, you know, they do all this in Vegas and they come to us and they go, okay, I have this and I want to finish it now. Well, but you can't go anywhere from where you are. I mean, we had one recently, a movie, and she'd cut the whole thing in Vegas. Somebody convinced her that Vegas was the best editing application in the world, and Sony was like, gave her a free system or something. I don't know how it ended up, but you know, you can't go anywhere else from there. So we had to get a QuickTime movie out of it to take it into color to do the color correction. And
you can't even get an EDL out of Vegas.
EDL did, yeah. We couldn't get an EDL that worked to go into Final Cut. And so thank God Book has that little recut or out of way where it goes through and it actually notches the QuickTime movie. So that saved us a tremendous amount of work. So, you know, that's an example of, had she come to us in the first place, it wasn't like she was already a Vegas editor.
No.
She was looking for we would have said, look, go to Final Cut.
Yeah.
Avid or Final Cut, doesn't matter. Whichever one you like, you know, actually she's on a PC, I guess, since she was doing Vegas, so yes. it would have to be Media Composer. But, you know, then at the back end of it, it's really easy to go through all the finishing steps. But this is the kind of thing where they come to us after they've made all the mistakes and they go, can you straighten it out? And it ends up costing them a lot more in the long run.
Which is really the main point of this discussion is that how, even with these creative editors, how do we convince them to spend an hour with somebody who does know before you start, not at the other end where it's 20 hours that you've got to pay for or 50 hours to get you out of the hole, whereas 1 or 2 hours up front can save an enormous amount of pain at the back end.
A lot of it's lack of experience. You know, it's because, like, for instance, now this woman went through all this. Next time, she probably will consult us before she starts her post. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
That's experience. You know, you learn a good post supervisor is going to save you tons of money in post because they've already learned and gone through all the mistakes over their career. You know, that's where you pay for experience. People who don't have any money up front end up paying more in the back because they don't want to pay for the experience up front. And so they end up learning the experience themselves, and it's generally very costly.
Certainly, there's a certain level of arrogance there, though, isn't there? That somebody who avowedly doesn't know what they're on about doesn't go out and research what they need to be on about before they start. There's a certain degree of arrogance that I know what I'm doing, I'm going to go.
I got to tell you, as a guy who finished a film, which I did, you know, coming out of film school, I actually made a feature film, which is impossible to do because I didn't know it was impossible to do.
Right.
You know, and I think that's the big thing is, you know, this woman who made this movie didn't know she couldn't do it.
Right. And that's a fair point.
You know, if you do enough research, you're going to convince yourself, I can't do it. It's just too much to deal with.
That's a fair point, I guess.
So, yeah. A lot of movies get made, you know, by first-timers because they don't know they can't do it.
Yep, and go nowhere because they had a passion to make a movie, not a passion to have a business.
Well, that certainly happens too, yes.
Well, is it 2,000-plus movies get submitted to Sundance every year for 20 or 30 slots to actually display, of which 1% or 2% are going to be picked up? That's not a good odds if you haven't thought about the entire business process from shooting it to recouping whatever you've put in it, be it 500 or 500,000 or 5 million.
Right.
You can raise money from family or friends at least once or max your credit cards out and produce something, but if you haven't thought it through the rest of the process about how it's going to return on your investment, unless you're using it as purely a showcase piece to show to somebody else, see, I can make a movie.
And see, I think in that, when we're off on a tangent, but I'll wrap this tangent up by just saying that I think that if you're going to do that as a showcase, if the concept is, I'm going to show people I'm capable of doing this, you should just put everything into making a 5-minute piece.
Exactly.
That's awesome. And then, trust me, you throw it on the internet, if it's really that good, it'll go viral, you'll get picked up, and life will be good, and you won't have to beat your brains out to try to make an hour and a half or 2 hours worth of material that'll be okay, maybe, and it'll kill you by the time you're done with it, and then you can't sell anyway. So just figure, all right, I'm not going to get my money back, but I'm going to just put it into a 5-minute piece, and you can get so much, you know, you can do commercial level production.
Yes.
At that, you know, if you're going for 5 minutes, as opposed to trying to make the 2-hour movie.
And producing a 5-minute piece with a DSLR for the image quality and that filmic nature isn't quite as painful as trying to do 2 hours and managing that media in any of the current apps, even those that pretend to do it natively.
It's easier, yes. Getting an actor to work free for 2 days is a lot easier than, you know, for a
two
month.
2 months.
Yeah. So on down the line, I mean, there's all kinds of reasons why it makes more sense to do that. And most people aren't going to sit and watch a 2-hour, you know, if you send your movie out to everybody, unless, you know, they pop it in, they open up 2 hours of time somehow magically in their busy day and go, okay, I'll try and watch this movie. And then you better grab them in the first 10 seconds and hold them for the whole 2 hours.
Yes.
Or they're flipping around because somebody say, hey, look, check out this link. And they go there and it's 3 minutes long. They're willing to make that commitment. And if it's an awesome 3 minutes, you're in. they know who you are now. So yeah. Anyways, back to the workflow.
We need these people who just want to get in and cut to start to at least consider the fact there are workflow issues that they have to deal with.
Until it's all automated somehow, which we're the magic assistant editor someday. Yeah. And if anybody does it, it'll be you guys. But
yes. Yeah. Well, I want to get rid of the drudgery work. I think it's going to be a long, long time, and I'm not going to live long enough to see that creative polish that an editor can bring. But certainly technically competent edits are relatively easy to do.
Well, we're talking about workflow, though. I mean, yes. You know, if it shouldn't matter what codecs they shot with. It shouldn't matter what editing application I particularly like to work in. I should be able to just get in there and do it. And then at the end, I should be able to, you know, either spit it out or send it out for finishing, and anybody else should be able to take it in. That would be the ideal world. What a good assistant does is make all that happen for you. But a lot of that is technical drudgery that, you know, could be simplified.
And there are a lot more people working without assistants that are working with assistants. I would imagine even the sort of finishing you get in here at Alpha Dogs for finishing are largely being shot without assistants, or largely being edited without assistants.
There's a lot, but, you know, I mean, a lot of the reality stuff, obviously, they have to have assistants. Just the quantity of data to deal with.
The wrangling of the media is amazing. I don't know how reality ever gets down from the enormous amount of footage that they shoot.
It is phenomenal, I'll tell you. And it's interesting when you get the different companies, the ones who've been doing it for a while in various budget ranges, it's interesting to watch. And this is pertinent, so I'm not too much off on a tangent because this has to do with workflow. But of the various workflows, one common one is that you have a producer, essentially a story producer, who's there on the shoot making notes throughout so that it can now go, you know, they can give that notes to a story editor who will, you know, basically flesh it out into a story and give that to the assistant editor who strings it together, and then the editor goes in and polishes it. That's pretty efficient, and on lower budget and faster turnaround, you know, that's what they'll do because they need to. The next step up is, you know, we've shot tons of stuff. We don't have a story producer who can be everywhere all the time. So now you have story editors who cull through all that footage and find the story in there and build it after the fact and then send that to the editors, etc. And then the third workflow is you just hand a bunch of footage to the editor and go, you know, fine, make the piece. But that takes a storytelling editor, or a predator, really, is what it amounts to, because they're playing both roles. So they're different workflows, and, you know, you need, like, those guys, the companies that allow, you know, have the editors doing it, they have 6 to 8 weeks to get, you know, a locked cut. The low-budget companies that have the story producer out there, you know, doing it ahead of time, you know, may have 2 weeks to turn around a locked cut. There's a big difference. So you have to, you know, it's the amount of preparation in the front. Now, those are established companies. They've figured out how to do all this stuff. We have a client right now, who shall remain nameless, who shot a series of competitions leading up to a final competition. So they've shot several of them so far. This is, you know, documentary style, hour-long shows. And, you know, the director thought it would be a good idea to shoot this with a RED camera and a 5D.
Yeah. I'd rather not deal with the complications of mixing those in a workflow.
And this is for a documentary style show that has about a 2-week turnaround to a finished product.
Ouch.
Yes. So, needless to say, it's been, at best, it's been interesting to try to pull this thing off. And, you know, they shot the RED camera at 23.98, and then they shot the 5D at 29.97 sometimes, and sometimes at 23.98. Oh, and by the way, they have to deliver 720p 60. So, you know, you go through that kind of thing is this nightmare to pull off just normally if you had a lot of time. But with a very short turnaround time, it makes it really complicated. And they come to us.
Yes, half an hour conversation with you or I before they started shooting.
You would be, why would you shoot that with a RED? Yeah. This is a documentary. You're not, you know.
You need running gun.
For a sports channel.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the kind of thing where, a little bit of.
Stop being the artisan. You realize you're in a business and this is a churn factory. You've got 2 weeks. You're not making art.
That's it. And let's just say he was replaced off the show, obviously, in post.
Yes.
Yeah.
Half an hour, all you guys that just want to get in and cut, before you start shooting, give me a call. You can search on the internet, Philip Hodgett's cell phone number. You will find my cell phone number on the internet. And give me a call or give Terry a call. Half an hour up front will save you enormous amounts of pain later and maybe even allow you to get your project finished.
Yeah, so, and we do get those calls all the time.
You know? And Those people who call, full kudos, because you're the ones that are going to have a smooth flow through to the end result.
Right.
Those that don't call, we like you too, because we can make an enormous amount of money off you on the back end, because you're really screwed without us.
Yeah,
and without that experience.
Yeah. That's an interesting point, because it's, again, what I find, the people who mostly call ahead are the ones who already have been in the business for a while.
Yes. They're the ones that know that the problem may arise, and they want to eliminate the fit. Well, I think that wraps up the concept of whether you should cut or whether the workflow is important, because the answer is you can only cut when the workflow is right, and you can only get the result that you want when the workflow is right.
Sounds good to me.
And speaking of workflow, if you were looking at automating parts of your workflow or making it flow more smoothly, check out assisted editing at assistededediting.com, and check out my blog at philiphodgetts.com for the random thoughts of the universe that go through my mind.
And if you need to capture from tape or output the tape, check out digitalservicestation.com for a digital service station near you. And if you're looking to make your project look and sound great at the end, then Alpha Dogs at alphadogs.tv. That's all I've got.
And we'll be back soon with another episode of The Terrence and Phillips Show.